It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Ask housing experts in this city, and they will likely tell you that Pittsburgh is in the midst of a deepening affordable housing crisis, with a shortage of over 20,000 affordable units to meet residents' needs. After a series of community forums, the city's Affordable Housing Task Force presented its recommendations to City Council last week. Today, we're talking about those recommendations with City Councilman Daniel Lavelle, who led the group, along with City Planning Director Ray Gastel. Daniel Lavelle, Ray Gastel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you can join the conversation with us here with comments and questions about these recommendations and the affordable housing crisis in Pittsburgh in general at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essphgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at essphgh. What are you seeing out there? Are you someone who has been forced out? Are you having trouble finding an affordable place to live for you and your family? What do you think should happen going forward? The number 412-246-2002. And first of all, Councilman Lavelle and Ray Gastel, before we parse through the recommendations, explain the focus of this. What are you attempting to do?
Well, I think the chief focus here is to look at the need in the city and address it in ways, building on programs we already have and also adding programs. I think there are thousands of folks, especially in the 50% and below of the area median income. That's about, for a family of four, below about 37,000. And those folks have what we call sort of a cost burdened, many of them are, cost burden. And that means they're spending more than 30% of their household income on household expenses, you know, rent plus utilities, or a mortgage plus utilities, et cetera. And that's a sort of a national standard. Folks really are spending so much on housing that they don't have enough resources for other needs, you know, especially when they're in those lower income categories. So we've heard that concern, and we're working to address that concern.
And when did we really see this problem become more and more pronounced in Pittsburgh? Was it when it was designated that we were the most livable city? Was it when the economic drivers changed and it was no longer the steel industry that was driving the Pittsburgh economy and it was Eds and Meds and you were bringing in people from around the country and around the world to work at places like Google? Is that when it all started?
I think we've seen it really take hold in the last couple years. Historically, Pittsburgh's housing market is very stable. It slowly increases. It doesn't really spike. But over the years, and most recently, we've seen in specific neighborhoods in the city, so let's say Lawrenceville or maybe Southside Flats or parts of the East End, where all of a sudden the market has truly taken hold and we've seen that drastic increases in value in the homes, and people begin to really feel that pressure. You also have other communities that are beginning to realize that if we don't address this issue now, the future for us, we could be in the same position that some believe East Liberty is in. So in the Hill District, they're looking at the future redevelopment of the Lower Hill, and there's concern that if all this market rate development comes in, what will that do to the rest of the neighborhood in terms of increase in costs, increase of taxes? And if we don't address this issue now, we could, in the near future, be displaced.
And you've been on the show. We've talked about this before. The situation in the Lower Hill, the Penguins are, you know, they want to develop the area where the Civic Arena used to sit. And there's some uncertainty about exactly how that's going to happen and what will happen to the people that have lived in that neighborhood for years and years. So is it really about, Councilman Lavelle, is it really about stabilizing neighborhoods, preserving the core of the city for you?
It is. Across this entire city, what we've sort of begun to learn is there are those who are concerned in affordable housing, but there are those who are also concerned in preserving the current value of their home that are also looking for additional development to actually come in. And so this conversation has begun to be a much larger one than simply affordable housing, but rather how do we ensure that as the city continues to grow, that those who have been here for years also realize that benefit without being displaced?
Ray Gastel, why is it important to fight for affordable housing? And certainly Councilman Lavelle's making a good case This is about integrity of neighborhoods and preserving the heritage of the city, the people who have lived and worked here and have been dedicated to the best interests of the city. And yet, this is so much of this is a business and it's about making money. People, property developers come in. They may not care who lives there, but that's the way it's always been. So why worry about affordable housing instead of leaving it to whatever the market will bear?
Well, I think because there's an opportunity here. When we have this kind of growth and this kind of new development, which is to date limited to a handful of neighborhoods in the city, yet it's still impactful and very present. And when you have that kind of opportunity, we can harness that to produce additional affordable housing. That's something that, it's both because we can see, you can harness, that's why we talk about this incentive-based inclusionary policy, that if you're going to come to the city and get a benefit of some kind, whether it's a tax benefit or a zoning upgrade and so forth, we're going to be looking very closely at ways to sort of say, that's great, but in interest of this neighborhood and in the interest of the city, we want to see that there's a shared public benefit here that helps build affordable housing.
Isn't there too sort of a wisdom of, making it affordable for the people who call this home, who have no plans to leave? Because if you open up all the housing for people who are maybe taking advantage of a business opportunity or, a good living situation, but may not necessarily be interested in staying here over the long term, isn't this about not only preserving the core of your city, but the city itself, really?
Well, I think there's a number of things to think about here. I mean, we found that the city is now 51% renters, and it's 49% owners in terms of our households. We've got about 133,500 households. And so there are renters of all kinds, long-term renters, there are newcomers, there's people that actually have moved into these new properties. There's a real range of who's in them. And I wouldn't make any core assumptions about who's in some of the newer buildings. But the thing that matters here is whoever is in those new buildings, we want to make sure that people that have been here do get to stay in their neighborhoods, and we try and avoid displacement as much as we can, because those are, as you stated it very well, we have some programs that are included in these recommendations that are about that. Tax abate programs, something that's sometimes informally called a circuit breaker that Philadelphia has, where if in fact you're in a neighborhood where values have gone up really fast and you are in fact an owner, you're able to, we can sort of adjust your tax increases in order to recognize that you've had this increase in value is one that your income may not be able to respond to. Also for aging in place, we have a similar recommendation. So that as you're older, you're not, unduly burdened. And so those are a number of tools we want to use. We're also trying to make sure that we better deploy existing tax credit programs for rehabilitation, because one of the best ways we can keep neighborhoods stable and keep people in their neighborhoods if we're actually able to produce and actually rehab existing housing. And not just gut rehabs, actually also sort of relatively minor repairs that make all the difference between being able to stay in your house or not. So those are all in the list of what we want to do, because we think Pittsburgh has room for these new housing projects, new for these the renters that we're talking about, the sort of very high profile projects. That is part of the city has a need for job and other growth, and that's one of the ways to accommodate that. At the same time, we want to make sure that benefit for the city is also doesn't take away from the people who've been here.
And I think that last part is really critical and really important in terms of the stabilization of neighborhoods and the current housing stock that currently exists. Because while some of our communities are experiencing growth, many of our neighborhoods are still seeing people leave. And part of that is because the housing stock has not been stabilized, that we haven't really invested in what's currently there. And if we did so, then I think you would see more of the core residents who have been here for long staying and reinvesting in those communities.
And Ray Gastel, you mentioned the figure that 51% of the people living in Pittsburgh are renters, 49%
of the households.
Yeah. In Pittsburgh are renters, and 49% own. Mm-hmm. Has that traditionally been the figure, or has that changed, or is that something that's different from what we've traditionally seen in terms of that percentage breakdown?
There has been a moderate decline in the ownership rate. That's actually a national trend, though. It's not unique to Pittsburgh. I mean, I think we're finding, especially in the production of new housing, an awful lot of the production of new is rental, and that's nationally.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about affordable housing in Pittsburgh and the recommendations that have come forth from the city's Affordable Housing Task Force. Our guests are City Councilman Daniel Lavelle and City Planning Director Ray Gastel. You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. We have these gentlemen with us at least until the bottom of the hour. And our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at esspgh. Again, the number to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. So let's get into the recommendations that the city, that the Affordable Housing Task Force has come up with for the city. This plan includes a lot of things. I know we can't go into detail about all of it, but sort of break it down for us in the little bite-sized chunks, the main points that people need to know about. Ray,
sure.
or Daniel.
Well, I'll either, start off, either, and okay. The councilman and I will do it together. One recommendation is a housing trust fund. And what a housing trust fund does is it basically provides the it's not the amount of money that goes, you don't produce, you know, X thousand dollars or X million dollars and produce exactly housing. It's through leveraging. It's through being the gap financing. You have a project that is trying to include affordable housing but can't really quite make the numbers work. And through a trust fund like this, you close the gap. And that allows us with, with $10 million can actually, you know, make a dent. With that type of project. Similarly, we have incentive-based inclusionary housing. This is, you know, as you know today, we don't have incentives for affordable housing. We're starting from zero. What this does is it allows us to actually look at, and we mentioned this a little bit before, but look at the types of benefits, public benefits that are, that you're getting a below market land sale, that there's a significant zoning change, et cetera. Those are things we're going to look at very closely to see whether there's a way to use those and connect them to an incentive for affordable housing. Today, we have some incentives, for example, for LEED and for like sustainability. We want to make sure that we extend that type of incentive to affordable housing as well. And we think we have a real opportunity there.
So just to jump in, so if somebody comes in and wants to, develop a property and create units at a certain market value, that a percentage of those units are set aside for affordable housing, and that there would be money set aside to incentivize those opportunities for property owners.
That's right. That's right. Because, you know, oftentimes today that we want to make sure that when we do provide incentives, when we do, because, remember, in the city of Pittsburgh, there's been an awful lot of our investment has actually had public subsidy for the past decades, as we're a city that's been getting back on its feet. That's just begun to change. And so our goal is that, so we really can stop and think about this and say, in addition to what we already considered, is there another core public benefit that we want to make sure gets achieved here? And it's clear from what we've heard in the community and from our own work that affordable housing is one of those that we can look to. There's just quickly three others. Would you like to?
Sure.
Let's get carry on. But there's increasing use of a 4% low-income housing tax credit. Now, I realize that's kind of a inside baseball reference, but that's a low-income housing tax credit is one of the, throughout the nation, the most important federal program that has produced affordable housing in the last decades has actually been the low-income housing tax credit. It's got two types. One is a 9%, which is a deeper tax credit, and then there's this 4% one. The reason we're referencing it is that we've been looking at how it could be deployed better, especially for rehab and for looking at existing, because it's not as deep a subsidy, but we think we can use it better. We have a lot of specific recommendations about that.
And it works well with properties being rehab, because that's a lot of what we have here.
That is one thing it can really be good for, yes. And I think that we think it hasn't been used to the level it might be there. I mean, the fourth is there's something that people, I know, is actively concerned here. We've got about 15,000, more like 15,500 or more of deed-restricted housing in this city, about 12% of our whole stock today. That means that it's income-restricted, I should say. You can only live in it if you're at a certain income.
Right.
We've noticed that we have about, in the next few years, or by 2020, I think we estimate about 1,700 units that may come out of those income restrictions. And that's something, one of the things we recommend is looking very closely at how we keep those, preserve that existing income-restricted housing. Now, that takes various strategies and programs we mentioned, but that's something we're going to look at really closely. And finally, I think I mentioned already the types of programs that we're trying. We call it preserving the sort of existing affordable housing stock, one that isn't deed-restricted. It's just the market has made it. It's affordable just by, you know, people at certain incomes can afford it and get it on the regular market. But those are exactly the properties that, unless we're vigilant about making sure that they're, you know, in the neighborhoods that are not gaining value, that those are, they stay affordable because we get those repairs, we get that rehab, we get, you know, we do it to scale. And secondly, we're also, this sort of tax abatement and other strategies help people in those affordable housing that they have today.
And Daniel Lavelle, you're a man who's walking in two worlds here, because you're a part of this effort to look at how to solve these problems. And the package was presented to the city council, of which you are, of course, a part. So, you know, as this was received last week, what was the reaction from the city council in terms of whether this is doable? And there are questions that I'll kind of follow up with, but just in a general sense, what's the feeling?
I think the general sentiment is, yes, we need to address this matter, but we're not exactly sure how. And I think the biggest question for council and for the city at large, meaning the residents, is going to be, how are we going to pay for this? Because all of this comes at a cost. And Director Gastel mentioned the $10 million recommendation to put in the trust fund. The city council specifically is really going to have to take a deep dive into how much out of our operating budget are we willing to dedicate to this effort. And if we can't find it there, which I can promise you we won't, where are we going to get additional revenue from? There are some recommendations that come out of the task force in terms of where we could potentially see new revenue come from. But the city residents are really going to have to weigh in on this on all levels, whether it's the gap financing that is needed or whether it's the stabilization of the current market that exists. One really important thing to note is that we actually can't build new our way out of this problem. Currently, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Director, at most, using the current mechanisms we have, the city can produce about 150 new units of affordable housing a year via our tax credit programs.
We can get a little higher, but yeah.
Okay.
What you're saying is that he's really referring to the sort of the higher level of subsidy through the low-income housing tax credit programs, and you can only get about 3 to 4 per year in this city. That's a limited fund.
So because of that, we can't build new to immediately address this, which means we're going to have to really reinvest in our current stock of housing, which becomes really critical. And city council and the city at large is going to have a very real and honest conversation in terms of how much are we willing to put towards this effort to preserve our core neighborhoods and stabilize them.
Is it financially, does it make more financial sense to reinvest or to create something new, and to invest in the stock that's already there, but that might be in disrepair in a lot of cases, probably, and I know there's limits to what you can do and where you can do it, but does it make sense just to create a new buildings, which some of which will happen, but as opposed to trying to come up with money to rehab houses?
I think it's going to have to be a combination of the two. And I think the recommendations coming out of the task force address that and say you have to do both. It can't be one or the either. Lower Hill, as an example, will be new. But those dollars need to be leveraged in order to stabilize what's already existing in the neighborhood. There are parts of our city where you also have a land issue in terms of you don't necessarily have all the mass to really build new. But you have dilapidated properties that could be reinvested in. So it has to be both.
And how do you plan to repurpose blighted properties? I'm guessing that, you know, there's some great old houses here, but man, the cost of bringing those back to livability in some cases would be, I would think, almost cost prohibitive. What about that?
Well, some of them do take significant expenses. I mean, I think we've talked about two levels of type of repair, and you're right. I mean, in general, they still cost less than a new unit, so you're still getting a savings potentially there. I think that one of the ways it has to be done, it's going to call on not just market forces, but it's going to call on, today we have a very active philanthropic community. I think in some neighborhoods in the city, they've actually begun to get to scale in terms of bringing buildings up to code. There's I think that there's scores of units in in Hazelwood that if they rebuilding together, Pittsburgh has worked on. There's a number of other programs that I just don't mean to call them out. There's also the URA, the sort of public authorities has a programs that have gotten a lot of that done. The question is, how can we get it to scale and like get it, you know, sort of look at the best models that are already here in Pittsburgh today. They're not just getting two or three of them done, but really getting to like 20, 30, 40, 50. If you actually begin to spread that kind of number through the neighborhoods, we can really achieve a lot. And I think we have a couple of recommendations here, just different tax strategies, better partnerships to get it done.
And is there a timetable for implementing these plans? A lot of people are thinking, when are we going to see results?
Well, I think that among the results is we're going to try and move forward with our final recommendations. We're going to try and make sure that there's some things which are going to be a recommendation. Remember, these are ultimately recommendations to the city council and the mayor.
Right.
And it's their consideration of how to move forward on most of these items. At the same time, there's items which are going to be further along and sort of, you know, really, you know, we like, here's a proposed structure for a trust fund, or here's a proposed, you know, really get to the detail. There'll be others where the details are going to have to go a little bit further. But we want to get this through. We want to move on this in terms of legislatively and in policy terms, you know, before the end of 2016. And then some of it will happen actually, you know, formally will happen in 2017. But I think that we really see this getting going, and it can, I think there's a, we could see the results of this, I think, as early as 2017 in terms of projects.
And Councilman Lavelle, explain the importance of establishing mixed income communities. I understand is the goal of whatever ends up happening at the old Civic Arena site. That's something that the city feels is very important, or at least people like you who are a champion of that cause.
Yes. It's shared prosperity. It's shared wealth. One of the worst things you can do, and we know this in Pittsburgh and we know it across the country, is concentrate poverty. When you concentrate poverty, the outcome of that, whether it be socially, whether it's through violence, whether it's through the educational system, has a very negative impact. And so what we're attempting to do is ensure that across the city you have mixed income neighborhoods where everyone can mutually prosper and move forward. There have been studies that talk about those in poorer situations, if you really want to give them a better chance, move them out of the concentrated areas of poverty, put them in mixed income neighborhoods, because now they're going to begin to experience better schools. They're going to get more and better resources. They're going to have a more diverse community around them, which will open up opportunities for job opportunities and things of that nature. And we want our entire city to thrive. And so that's really the intent.
And what are the obstacles to that? I mean, there are some entities that don't necessarily want this, or there seems to be a lot of give and take going on about what percentage of any new housing that's created in that area of the Lower Hill would be set aside for lower income people. And so describe the give and take that's going on there and the forces you're up against.
Well, some of the forces and the obstacle is private market versus the will and the intent of the people. And those don't always immediately get, they're not always immediately on the same page. In terms of the Lower Hill, we have reached agreement in terms of how we should be moving forward. But I also think we need to realize that it's in the city's economic best interest to do this, to make sure that all boats do actually rise. And it's in our future's interest to really do this to ensure that, one, we don't continue to lose population, that people can live here and they can thrive, but that then it becomes an even more inviting place for people outside of the city to come. Because if we don't do that, if we're not really investing in these communities, then we're ultimately not investing in our future workforce. We see an aging population that is retiring. We need to replace those jobs. There are new growth markets that need to be addressed as well. So if we're not doing this, then we're actually not addressing our own economic interests.
We've been talking about affordable housing in the city of Pittsburgh and the work and recommendations of the city's Affordable Housing Task Force with members of that task force, Councilman Daniel Lavelle, Pittsburgh City Councilman, who's been with us here in studio, along with Ray Gastel, who is the who is a member of the city's Affordable Housing Task Force, and who is also the City Planning Director for the City of Pittsburgh. Ray Gastel, Daniel Lavelle, thank you both for being here and sharing this information with us. And we'll be, I'm sure, talking in the future as this progresses.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll continue our discussion of affordable housing in Pittsburgh with Helen Gerhardt, a member of Homes for All Pittsburgh. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.